Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger and the Mason City Globe Gazette for Tuesday, October 31st. Happy Halloween. I'm your reader, Mark John Conley. Now let's get started with some local news headlines from Fort Dodge. Our first headline today reads, Under Construction, Westbound Kenyon Road Bridge to Close Thursday. Barricades and concrete dividers went up and around the Kenyon Road Bridge Monday. People driving around Fort Dodge are going to have to get used to them. Those barricades and dividers will be up through September 2024, while the westbound side of the bridge is dismantled and replaced. The westbound side of the bridge will be closed Thursday, according to Jenny Hoskins, the resident construction engineer at the Iowa Department of Transportation's Jefferson office. They intend to make the traffic switch Thursday, she said. The traffic switch she spoke of will place both eastbound and westbound traffic on the eastbound side of the bridge. There will be one lane of traffic going in each direction, separated by the concrete dividers. The westbound lanes were expected to close Monday. Hoskins said the time needed to get all the barriers and dividers in place led to the delay. It's a lot of work to get that set up, she said. As of Monday afternoon, southbound traffic on 8th Street can no longer turn west onto the bridge. Eastbound traffic on the bridge cannot turn north onto 8th Street. However, westbound traffic on 5th Avenue South, Kenyon Road, can still turn north onto 8th Street. Sections of Avenue B and South 7th Street are also closed. Additionally, the trail that goes under the bridge is closed. Soon after the westbound side of the bridge is closed, contractors will begin the long process of taking it apart and building new structures in its place. United Contractors of Johnston has a $15.2 million contract from the state for the job. The Kenyon Road Bridge actually consists of four structures, two on the westbound side and two on the eastbound side, that carry the road over the Canadian National Railway tracks, Pleasant Valley, and the Des Moines River. The eastbound and westbound sides are different kinds of structures. The eastbound bridges are made of concrete, while the westbound ones are steel frame bridges. The westbound bridges have a very similar design to the Interstate 35 West Bridge that collapsed in the Twin Cities of Minnesota in 2007. The project was supposed to start September 20th, but was postponed so that some utilities could be relocated. Our next local news headline for Fort Dodge reads, Fort Dodge man gets life in prison. Davis convicted of murder in July 4th shooting. Two young lives were lost on the evening of July 4th as fireworks lit up the sky above Fort Dodge, according to the mother of a homicide victim. When you stare at the man in the mirror every day, you have to see yourself knowing the wrongs that you did. LaVita Pettigrew, the mother of Jameel Redding Pettigrew, said to her son's killer at a sentencing hearing on Monday, You may feel justified in your actions, but remember you cost yourself your own life, not just Jameel's. Jamarian, or JJ as he is known, Davis, age 18, was convicted earlier this month for the first-degree murder of 15-year-old Redding Pettigrew. On Monday, Davis was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. Pettigrew gave the only victim impact statement at the sentencing hearing. Our baby boy Jameel is already free and ready to enjoy the goodness and glory of heaven, she said. One day you'll know our pain, and I hope it changes you for the better, but it only starts with you. In his 15 short years, Redding Pettigrew changed many lives with his love and light, never to be forgotten, Pettigrew said. With this one life that we get, you have to make change and get it right while you have the time, because when you close your eyes, you close your mind, she said to Davis. Please make a change and demand change within yourself. The case was prosecuted by the Webster County Attorney's Office, with First Assistant County Attorney Brad McIntyre and Assistant County Attorney Bailey Taylor. The legal system worked to bring justice to Jameel Redding Pettigrew and his family, McIntyre said. This case came together through the work of law enforcement and members of our own community. Without their work, this outcome would not have been possible. Davis was arrested in July, 2 days after Redding Pettigrew was gunned down near the intersection of South 15th Street and 4th Avenue South, around 9:44 p.m. on July 4th. Upon motion from the defense, Davis's trial was moved to Story County. During trial, witnesses testified to seeing Davis carrying a mini Draco firearm throughout the day on July 4th, and that he had been at a holiday barbecue party at 216 South 14th Street. Witnesses testified that in the evening, Redding Pettigrew was walking past the house when his cousin, Carmari Mosley, a guest at the party, beckoned him over. The teen was offered some food, but declined because he was walking home and was just a few blocks away. After Redding Pettigrew left, witnesses testified Davis heard Mosley tell one of the party's hosts that Redding Pettigrew was DJ's little brother. Davis then took off down an alley in the same direction that the teen was headed. The jury was shown home security video that shows Redding Pettigrew being shot several times in the intersection of 4th Avenue South and South 15th Street. The motive for the shooting, McIntyre told the jury during opening arguments, was that Redding Pettigrew's older brother, 17-year-old Devonque Pettigrew, is accused of shooting and killing Patrick Walker, a close friend of Davis. Walker was gunned down in downtown Fort Dodge in the 100 block of North 10th Street on May 2nd. Pettigrew has been charged with first-degree murder for that shooting and is awaiting trial. Defense witness Margie Berg testified that she was walking near the intersection of 4th Avenue South and South 15th Street when the shooting occurred. She testified that she was extremely close to the corner and got a, quote, good look at the shooter and that it was not Davis. However, the security video from the neighbor showed that Berg was at least one house down from the corner. Prior to the sentencing, Charles Kenville of the Mason City Public Defender's Office filed a motion for a new trial, arguing that there was insufficient evidence to prove that Davis was responsible for the shooting. In the motion, Kenville seems to imply that witness Skylar Ellington could have been the shooter because he had access to the gun that was used in the shooting, and he was present when the weapon was recovered by the police. In a resistance filing, McIntyre argued that the state presented, quote, overwhelming evidence to support a guilty verdict in the case. On Monday, just prior to the sentencing, District Court Judge Kurt Stobie agreed with the state. I believe that the evidence established that you did this in a very intentional manner. And when people do that, when people cross the line and they take another life in a very calculated manner and are able to live with it, well, that's a very difficult thing for me to understand, Stobie said a little while later during the sentencing. In addition to the prison sentence, Davis will be required to pay $150,000 to Redding Pettigrew's heirs at law. Our next local news headline for Fort Dodge reads, owners selling Stratford Winery. Gables hope new owners will continue what they started. The dateline is Stratford. Backcountry Winery is on the market as its owners prepare to move their brewery operation to downtown Nevada. Preston and Amber Gable opened the winery in 2016, according to Amber Gable. "We are on to the next adventure," she said Sunday. They plan to open their brewery in downtown Nevada by mid-2024, she said. The couple hope whoever purchases their property at 3533 Fenton Avenue in Stratford will continue what they started on the acreage. "Hopefully, the next person will do it better than we did," she said, adding, "We're just looking for growth opportunities." The listing price for the property is $795,000. According to a social media post, the sale of the winery is fluid. "We've decided to list our property in hopes it stands out as a gem for someone, the same way it did for us nearly 10 years ago, though it looks a little different now. Whether you're interested in continuing the winery and event venue, or just looking for your own slice of the backcountry to share with gatherings of family and friends, we hope you'll explore this opportunity. We're happy to answer questions, serious inquiries only, and offer tours through our realtor. This listing is for the property only, but we would be happy to discuss with a serious party details on purchasing the business as well. Now through the end of the year, we're offering moving sale discounts to help us reduce inventory and lighten the load of our transition. Backcountry has been known for its wine, craft beers, and events in its renovated 1920s era barn. It was part of the summer farm crawl. Our next headline reads, Fort Dodge School Board election is Tuesday. 9 candidates will be on the ballot for the Fort Dodge Community School District Board of Education in next Tuesday's election. 8 of the 9 candidates are vying for the 4 seats on the board that are up for election. The 9th candidate, Dan Altman, is the lone candidate running to fill a vacancy. Altman has been appointed to the board in March 2022 to fill a seat that had been vacated by the resignation of board member Dan Hansen. Iowa law requires board vacancy appointments to go through the election process at the next school board election to serve out the remainder of the unexpired term. The seats up for election for full terms are currently filled by Angie Tracy, Bill Kent, Diane Pratt, and Matt Moritz. Kent and Pratt are running for re-election to another 4-year term each. Moritz and Tracy did not file for re-election. New candidates for school board include Brian Pedersen, Keenan Shore, Terry Townsend, Allison Roderick, Sarah Sankey, and Emily Denklau. Polls will be open from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. on Election Day, November 7th. Our next local news headline reads, Lorville man charged in 6-year-old's shooting. Hearing set for November 13th. The dateline is Rockwell City. A Calhoun County father has been charged with felony child endangerment months after his 6-year-old son was fatally shot while handling an unsecured firearm he found in the home. According to court records, Justin Richard Pope, age 28, of Lorville, has been charged with child endangerment, resulting in death, a Class B felony, and making firearms available to a minor, an aggravated misdemeanor. Calhoun County Sheriff Pat Riley wrote in the criminal complaints that Pope left firearms easily accessible in areas of his residence where minors reside, 2 of which were loaded handguns. On June 16th, 6-year-old Alexander Pope picked up one of the loaded handguns, which fired and struck the child, killing him, the complaint says. A previous release from the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation said that the Calhoun County Sheriff's Office received a 911 call from 500 Maple Street in Lorville shortly before 7 a.m. that day. The criminal complaint for the misdemeanor charge notes that the firearms weren't secured by a trigger lock mechanism or stored in a locked box or container. Riley also noted that multiple children under the age of 14 resided in the home. Court records show that Justin Pope was charged on October 19th, just over 4 months after the fatal shooting. He had an initial appearance in Calhoun County Magistrate Court on October 24th. Justin Pope has been released from custody under the supervision of the Department of Correctional Services. A preliminary hearing is scheduled for November 13th. And now turning to local obituaries, first we remember Donna Tort of Payton. Donna K. Tort, the daughter of Myron and Marjorie Ayers Gilley, was born December 5, 1940, in Bagley, and passed away from this life surrounded by her family on October 28th. She lived a full and active life to the age of 82. A celebration of Donna's life will be held 10:30 a.m. today, Tuesday, October 31st, at Salem United Methodist Church in Payton, with Reverend David Arul Nathan officiating. Burial will be in the Payton Township Cemetery. A visitation with the family present to greet friends will be from 4 to 6 p.m. on Monday, October 30th. That would be yesterday, at Schlinginger Schroeder Funeral Home in Jefferson. Memorials are suggested to the Paula J. Baber Hospice Home in Fort Dodge. Next, we remember Delbert Roy Eslin. Delbert Roy Eslin, age 79 of Fort Dodge, passed away on Friday, October 27th at Trinity Regional Medical Center. A funeral service was held yesterday, Monday, October 30th, at St. Olaf Lutheran Church. Burial followed at Memorial Park Cemetery. Next, we remember Anthony Johnson. Anthony Wayne Johnson, affectionately known as AJ and Big Tone, passed away on October 28th in Fort Dodge. AJ was a beloved figure in his community, known for his passion, humor, and loving nature. A visitation will be held on Wednesday, November 1st, from 4 to 8 p.m. at Loffersweiler Funeral Home. A celebration of AJ's life will be held on Saturday, November 4th, beginning at 5 p.m. at Old Boston's in Fort Dodge. Next, we remember Doris Bonstetter. Doris Bonstetter, age 92 of Fort Dodge, passed away on Friday, October 27th at the Marion Home. A mass of Christian burial will be held on today, Tuesday, October 31st, at 10:30 a.m. at Holy Trinity Parish. Burial will follow at Memorial Park Cemetery. Family and friends will gather Monday, beginning at 3:45 p.m. for a rosary, followed by visitation from 4 to 7 at the Gunderson Funeral Home. Next, we remember Douglas Adams. Douglas, or Doug as he was known, Adams, age 76 of Otho, passed away peacefully on Saturday, October 28th, at Paula J. Baber Hospice House in Fort Dodge after a multi-year cancer battle. Memorial services will be held 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, November 1st, at Forest City United Methodist Church at 305 South Clark Street in Forest City, with Pastor Les Green officiating. A visitation will be held 9 a.m. until service time at 10:30 a.m. on Wednesday at the church. Burial of cremains will take place in Oakland Cemetery in Forest City, with military honors performed by the Forest City American Legion Honor Guard Post number 121. And now turning to some local sports news for Fort Dodge. This headline reads, Fort Dodge Senior High Senior Ayala commits to Iowa wrestling program. Two-time state runner-up will join his older brother as a Hawkeye. The dateline is Iowa City. Drew Ayala is ready to take his wrestling experience to the next and ultimate level. Fort Dodge's two-time state runner-up announced his verbal commitment to the University of Iowa wrestling program on Monday evening. Ayala will join his older brother Drake on the Hawkeye roster beginning in the fall of 2024. The main factors were the great coaching staff, partners in the room, and my education, Ayala said. It has motivated me a lot, seeing Drake wrestle for head coach Tom Brand's Big Ten powerhouse. I knew I wanted to push myself to be up there with him. Ayala is a consensus top 75 national recruit for his current high school senior class. The Dodger star is the country's 14th ranked prep grappler at 113 pounds, according to Flow Wrestling. Ayala has a career record of 106-12 with Fort Dodge Senior High. He placed fifth at state as a freshman in 2021, then earned silver medals in each of the last two seasons. Ayala is projected to compete at 120 pounds this year for the Dodgers. He is a combined 79-6 during his two-time runner-up stretch, becoming just the 14th Fort Dodge Senior High wrestler since 1960 to reach multiple state finals. Ayala is also a three-time Fargo Nationals All-American. "My goals are to be a state champ and Fargo champ," Ayala said. "It's my last opportunity to get them and will help me in my transition to the collegiate level." Ayala is one of four former Dodger state finalists returning to head coach Bobby Thompson's lineup this winter. Joining sophomore Dreshawn Ross, champion in 2023, senior Demarion Ross, runner-up in 2023, and junior Coy Davidson, runner-up in 2022. Last spring, Ayala brought home silver from Folk Style Nationals and a title from the AAU state tournament. Drake Ayala, a three-time Fort Dodge state champ, will be a redshirt sophomore at 125 pounds this season with the Hawkeyes. Drew Ayala is the seventh Division I Dodger wrestling recruit since 2015. And now, returning to some local news headlines, we have this one that reads, "Fort Dodge Police Investigating Rash of Vandalism." Dozens of residences, vehicles, and businesses in Fort Dodge sustained damage from apparent acts of criminal mischief early Monday morning. Fort Dodge Police Chief Dennis Quinn sent out a press release on Monday afternoon, stating that the police department has taken 39 incident reports related to broken windows in vehicles, residents, and businesses all across the city. He said that the department received even more calls, but not every caller elected to file an official report. The earliest report was called in at about 5:46 a.m., and the incidences are believed to have taken place between 2 and 6 a.m., Quinn said in the release. Quinn included a map showing locations of the reports, which can be found online. In his release, Quinn noted that video evidence is, quote, "extremely valuable," and encourages any residents or businesses who may have security video footage from the areas where the vandalism occurred to review their footage and contact police if they see anything suspicious. Information can also be submitted anonymously through Crime Stoppers by calling 515-573-1444 or by texting LEC and the tip to 274-637. And now turning to some local news briefs. This headline reads, "Iowa Central team offers yard raking this Saturday." The Iowa Central Community College women's basketball team is looking for some yards in need of raking. The team is planning a community service day on Saturday. As part of its service day, the team wants to rake leaves for senior citizens, the disabled, or anyone else who needs a helping hand. To get an address on the list for the team, contact Kelby Holmeister at 515-574-1342 or at Holmeister, and that's spelled H-O-M-E-I-S-T-E-R, at iowacentral.edu. And continuing with news briefs, this headline reads, "Friends of Library Book Sale is this week." The Friends of the Fort Dodge Public Library Fall Book Sale is this week. Sale hours are 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. today through Friday and 9 a.m. to noon on Saturday. On Friday, customers can fill a bag with books for $3. On Saturday, anything they can fit in a bag will cost $1. This news brief has a headline that reads, American Legion Breakfast is November 5th in Livermore. Sons of the American Legion Omelette Breakfast will be 8 a.m. to noon on Sunday in the Livermore American Legion basement. The breakfast will include omelets, homemade cinnamon rolls, milk, juice, and coffee. Dine-in or to-go orders will be accepted. The cost is $10 per person. And you are listening to the reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger and the Mason City Globe Gazette for Monday, October 31st on IRIS, Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's news for Mason City. Our first Mason City story today has a headline that reads, City will be moving house on Thursday. On Thursday, November 2nd, starting at approximately 9 a.m., the city will be conducting a structure move from 1019 4th Street Southwest to 1526 South Taft Avenue. The duration of the structure move is anticipated to last approximately 1 hour. The route of the move is as follows. Start at 1019 4th Street Southwest and turn south on Polk Place, west on 6th Street Southwest, south on South Pierce Avenue, west on 19th Street Southwest, north on South Taft Avenue to 1526 South Taft Avenue. Our next local news headline reads, Visit Mason City holds Toast to Tourism event. Visit Mason City's annual Toast to Tourism will be Thursday, November 2nd. This event is open to local tourism partners, family, friends, and colleagues. There's no cost to attend. The schedule for the evening is as follows. At 5:30 p.m. will be a happy hour and hors d'oeuvres. At 6 p.m., an annual meeting and awards presentation. Starting at 6:15 p.m., guest speaker Gary Kroger will provide fun, entertainment, and inspirational messages. Kroger, an Iowa native and Northwestern University alum, co-founded the Practical Theater Company in Chicago alongside Julia Louis-Dreyfus and Brad Hall, and later appeared on Saturday Night Live and elsewhere on television and in films. Returning to Cedar Falls in 2003, he became creative director at Mud Advertising and is now CEO at Outlier Creative Solutions. The event will be held at the Music Man Square, with catering provided by Cynthia Lurwerke from the Decker House. Our next headline reads, McNider Art Museum announces fall puppet show. The Eulenspiegel Puppet Theater Company will present three showings of Uncle Rabbit's Adventures at 10 a.m., 1 p.m., and 6 p.m. on Thursday, November 9th in the Salisbury Room at the McNider Art Museum, according to a press release. All shows will be free and open to the public. Seating is first come, first served. Doors will open for seating 15 minutes before each show. This free show is made possible by a grant from the Bertha Stebbins Charitable Foundation. Masks are optional. Uncle Rabbit's Adventures uses large, beautifully crafted hand puppets and lots of fun props to tell the story of a wealthy land-owning goat who doesn't want to share with his neighbors. Watch Tio Conejo and his wife Rosita tend to their chores, plant, harvest, and trick Senor Cabra, or Mr. Goat, into sharing his agricultural wealth. Created by Monica Leo and late Mexican partner, puppeteer Eli Portugal, this show is performed by Leo and Stephanie Valez. It resonates Mexican culture and is enhanced with live music. Charles McNider Art Museum is located at 303 2nd Street Southeast in Mason City. Our next local story has a headline that reads, Woden Man Arrested for Murder. A Woden man was arrested in Freeborn County, Minnesota on Saturday night and charged with first-degree murder. the Hancock County Sheriff's Office was dispatched to 633 Way Avenue in Woden for a welfare check at 11:11 a.m. Saturday. Upon entering the premises, deputies found Karen Abby Cruz, age 56, who was declared deceased at the scene. According to a report from the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation, 56-year-old Roger Laverne Cruz Jr. has been accused of the crime. The pair were separated and living apart, the report said. Mike Krapfel, DCI special agent in charge, said the cause of death is still being investigated. The investigation is being conducted by the Hancock County Sheriff's Office and Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation. Additional assistance was provided by the Iowa State Patrol, Winnebago County Sheriff's Office, Lake Mills Police Department, Freeborn County Sheriff's Office, Albert Lee Police Department, and Hancock County Medical Examiner's Office. Our next headline reads, Cerro Gordo Public Health to host Hepatitis C testing event. Cerro Gordo County Public Health is hosting a free two-day hepatitis C testing event for those born from 1945 to 1965 and people considered high risk. Testing will be held at Cerro Gordo Public Health 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Tuesday, November 7th and Thursday, November 9th. Appointments are required. Schedule your appointment online by visiting cghealth.com/all-services/HEPC. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, 3 out of 4 people with hepatitis C were born from 1945 to 1965. The reason behind this is unknown. However, most people born in this time period are believed to have been infected in the 1960s through the 1980s, when transmission of hepatitis C was highest. Our next local news story has a headline that reads, Trinity Lutheran Church to hold annual Scandinavian Bazaar. Trinity Lutheran Church will hold its annual Scandinavian Bazaar from 8 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Thursday, November 2nd. This year's bazaar will feature a coffee shop serving a variety of Norwegian pastries and sandwiches. A $9 Scandinavian meatball dinner with pie will be served from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Various shops will sell holiday and specialty items, including a Scandinavian boutique, craft creations with unique handmade items, candy and bake shop, and the book nook with gently used puzzles and books. All proceeds support local church and community projects in the North Iowa area. Our next local news story has a headline that reads, No arrests in ongoing anti-Semitic vandalism in Sheffield. No arrests have been made as of Monday after multiple vehicles and buildings were vandalized over the last 2 weekends, many defaced by spray-painted swastikas. Sheffield Police Chief Andrew O'Connor said the vandalism occurred in the early morning hours of the last 2 Sundays. Somewhere between 15 and 20 locations have been targeted. No arrests have been made, but O'Connor said the investigation is ongoing and the department has some strong leads. The vandals have also written 333 Solutions and Draco $2 at the scene. O'Connor said he's not sure, but he thinks 333 Solutions refers to a website where things are sold cheaply. The only thing that we've seen or heard is that you can buy stuff on there for cheap, O'Connor said. That's the only thing I've heard from that. O'Connor said petty theft of items inside vehicles such as change has been going on as well. He said a couple of windows have been broken to gain access to the inside of the vehicles, but most vehicles were unlocked when the thefts took place. O'Connor said most of the vandalism took place in areas that are not well lit. Anyone with information about the vandalism should call the Sheffield Police Department at 641 892-4301 or the Franklin County Sheriff's Office at 641-456-2731. And also in today's Globe Gazette is a continuing series on school board candidates for the Mason City School Board. And today is profiled Constance DeAnda. Constance Connie DeAnda is a Mason City High School graduate and attended McKinley and Monroe. DeAnda is a full-time caregiver for her parent and a volunteer involved in Christian 12-step groups, life skill classes, and children's programs at Grace Evangelical Free Church and others. DeAnda has been a vocal presence at the school board meetings for several years, often opening the open forum in prayer before speaking on mask and vaccine mandates, book banning, and cell phone tower safety, and more. DeAnda has publicly read information provided by Moms for Liberty, which has been designated as a far-right-wing extremist group by the Southern Poverty Law Center and affiliated organizations at school board forums and meetings regarding book banning. The group grew out of an opposition to public health regulations for COVID-19, opposes LGBTQ+, and racially inclusive school curriculum, and has advocated book bans. When asked at the Mason City Education Association-sponsored candidate forum if she supported Moms for Liberty, DeAnda did not directly respond to the question, but read statistics provided by Moms for Liberty, saying they put out comprehensive lists of books that should be banned. She asked, "Is the curriculum that we are using in the schools teaching our children to disrespect and hate America? Are they patriotic? These are some issues that need to be asked good questions about." Our next local news story has a headline that reads, "Iowa Works hosts weekly hiring events to connect job-ready candidates and employers." The Iowa Works Mason City office at 600 South Pierce Avenue hosts weekly hiring events Tuesdays in the Job Center to connect job-ready candidates with area employees who are hiring. Employers from the area participate, and all interested applicants are encouraged to attend. There's never been a greater time to re-enter the workforce, and these weekly hiring events will help showcase the wide variety of positions available in our area, said Sarah Cook, business engagement consultant for Iowa Workforce Development within the Iowa Works Mason City Center. "Our weekly hiring events are often the first step to re-employment or even new careers in high-demand fields. Iowa Works stands ready to help any job seeker find the connection they need to get started." Tuesday's event features, from noon to 4 p.m., Cargill, Curry's Asa Abloy, Smithfield Foods, Metalcraft Incorporated, Mercy One, and Trellborg, Minnesota Rubber and Plastics. And now, turning to Mason City obituaries, we first remember Charles Lloyd Blake. Charles, or Chuck as he was known, Lloyd Blake, beloved husband, father, and grandfather, age 88, of Bella Vista, Arkansas, went to be with his Lord on October 14th. Chuck was born July 23, 1935, in Stacyville and grew up there. He married his childhood high school sweetheart, Myrna, on November 24, 1956, in Stacyville. Chuck was our loving perfectionist, imparting his steadfast work ethic along the way, and will be dearly missed. A funeral mass for Chuck will be held Saturday, November the 11th, at 11 a.m., at Visitation Church, located at 604 North Broad Street in Stacyville. In lieu of flowers, Chuck requested donations be made to St. Bernard of Clairvaux Catholic Church, located at 1 St. Bernard Lane in Bella Vista, Arkansas, 72715. Next, we remember Kay Dahlman. K. L. Dahlman, age 85, at Kanawha, passed away Thursday, October 26, at Kanawha Community Home. Funeral services will be held at 2:30 p.m. on Wednesday, November 1st at Ewing Funeral Chapel, located at 178 Center Street West in Britt, with Pastor Jeffrey White officiating. Visitation will be held from 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. prior to services on Wednesday at the funeral home. Next, we remember Kenneth Style. Kenneth, or Kenny, or Ken, as he was known, Style, passed away on September the 11th at Good Sam in Forest City. The entire family had been home and spent quality time with their dad and grandpa. Services will be held on November 4th at Our Savior's Lutheran Church in Leland from 1 to 3 p.m. We welcome all family and friends. If you're unable to attend, correspondence can be sent to Wendy Style, located at 10157 Stockwell Drive, Fishers, Indiana, 46038. Next, we remember Kevin F. Wilkie. Kevin F. Wilkie, age 73, of Mason City, died Friday, October 27th, at Mercy One North. Funeral services for Kevin will be held at 11 a.m. Wednesday, November 1st, at Fullerton Funeral Home, located at 123 2nd Street Southeast in Mason City. Officiating will be the Reverend Neil Matternack of Epiphany Parish. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to services. Interment will be in Elmwood St. Joseph Cemetery in Mason City. Next, we remember Eva Marie Otten. Eva Marie Otten, age 87, of Mason City, passed away peacefully Monday, October 23rd. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Thursday, November 2nd, at Bethlehem Lutheran Church, located at 419 North Delaware Avenue in Mason City, with the Reverend Sean Smith officiating. Burial will be in Memorial Park Cemetery in Mason City beside her husband, son, and sister. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, November 1st, at Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel, located at 126 3rd Street Northeast in Mason City. Visitation will continue 1 hour prior to the service at the church. Memorials may be directed to the Sunbeam Preschool and Daycare and Hawkeye Harvest Food Bank. Next, we remember Michael McNeil. Michael Sean McNeil was born in Monett, Missouri on October 13, 1969, and went to heaven on Sunday, October 22nd. Friends and family and co-workers are invited to a memorial service on Wednesday, November 15th at 6:30 p.m. at the VFW, located at 1603 South Monroe Avenue in Mason City. Visitors are welcome to arrive beginning at 6 p.m. And now turning to Dear Abby. Abby's first letter today has a headline that reads, "Family's Black Sheep is on its own again." They write, "Dear Abby, I've been having a hard time dealing with my family. We've never been close. My mother played favorites and never showed me any affection. My siblings followed suit, and I've always felt like an outsider. My father was wonderful and loved me very much, for which I am forever grateful. Both my parents died last year. I was walking on eggshells the entire time. My brothers and sisters seemed to think that I was now a member of the family. They included me in events and told me they loved me. I was so hopeful. After my mother's death, I was cut out of the family again. I am no longer invited to family celebrations or holidays. I'm heartbroken and lonely. I have no one left. Family is so important to me. I'm embarrassed to admit I am now estranged from everyone. Can you help?" And it's signed, "Black Sheep in Kentucky." And Abby responds, "Dear Black Sheep, unfortunately, your experience is not unique. I hear it more and more, in one variation or another. It's now time for you to build a family of your own, comprised of friendships with people you can trust. Many people do this, and when they do, find themselves happier and more rewarded than they felt with their relatives. As you do this, do not look back. Begin not by asking for friendship, but by being honest and befriending others. Look around, and you will see them everywhere. There's no shame in reaching out, so please do not feel embarrassed about being a member of, quote, a very large club. Abby's next letter today has a headline that reads, Man Orders Realtor Fiancé to Hand Over Commission. They write, Dear Abby, I'm a realtor and managing broker, helping my fiancé's son, Mark, buy a new home. We're set to close next month. Tonight, my fiancé, Simon, told me I am not to keep any of my commission, that Mark expects me to give it all to him. Granted, I was planning to give Mark a token of appreciation, a few hundred dollars perhaps, but not my entire commission. I told Simon he must have misunderstood that this is my job, my work. No one gives someone their entire paycheck, do they? I don't think there's any way Mark would expect 100% of my commission. But Simon says if I don't agree, there will be consequences. Our relationship is already strained, and I feel this is not only over the top, but also completely disrespectful. I'm trying not to rock the boat with the holidays coming up. Please help me. And it's signed On the Spot in Illinois. And Abby replies, Dear On the Spot, sometimes it's better to confront a problem than to ignore it for fear of what you might find out. This is one of those times. Tell your fiancé to explain what he meant by consequences if you don't agree to his son's unreasonable demand. Listen carefully to what he has to say. If you give in to emotional blackmail at this time, it's only a taste of what you will receive from him and his son in the future. If there's a wedding planned anytime soon, I urge you to slam on the brakes until this matter is ironed out to your satisfaction. And one final note from Abby today. She has a gentle reminder to parents of young children. Tonight, we witches and goblins will be out trick-or-treating. Please supervise them closely so they'll be safe. Happy Halloween, everyone. Love, Abby. And now turning to local sports headlines. We have this one that reads, High School Cross Country Storylines from the State Meet in Fort Dodge. The high school cross-country season wrapped up this weekend with the state meet in Fort Dodge. Here are storylines from the two-day event at Lakeside Municipal Golf Course. The Forest City girls finished fifth. The Indians had not made the state meet as a team since 2005, and they did not slow down here. Forest City finished in fifth in Class 2A after getting personal bests from four of its seven runners with 152 points. Des Moines Christian won the title, followed by Van Meter, Monticello, and Mid Prairie. Bethany Warren paced the Indians with a 14th place finish in 19 minutes, 35 seconds. Carmen Sharp finished in 29th at 20 minutes and 11 seconds. Zoe Holmes in 57th with 20 minutes and 46 seconds. Claire Weaver in 59th with 20 minutes and 50 seconds. And Emily Weaver in 75th with 21 minutes and 13 seconds. We got big-time performances from all of our kids, Coach DJ Wolfram said. To be fifth is incredible, beating some perennial powerhouses. We are really excited about the future for sure with the ladies. The team race was so tight in Class 2A that after the mile mark, Forest City was in third. And for the first time any of the Indians had made the state meet in their careers, Wolfram was happy with what he saw. The future looks bright, too. Sharp, Claire Weaver, and Ashley Ox are all freshmen this season. Warren is also a junior. We're so close, Wolfram said. We didn't arrive just happy to be there. Everybody knows who Forest City is now after that long drought, and to be top five is a testament to the work my girls have put in and the work of my staff. Forest City boys take eighth. After a slow start to the boys' 2A race, the Indians rebounded to finish in eighth with one of the youngest teams in the field, with five freshmen and two sophomores. Silas Gann finished in 56th with 17 minutes and 18 seconds, Keegan Albertson in 59th with 17 seconds, and 17 minutes and 19 seconds. Ethan Bertram in 66th with 17 minutes and 25 seconds. Cooper Blazer in 70th with 17 minutes and 30 seconds. And Grant Gaither in 71st with 17 minutes and 31 seconds. I'm convinced if that race was 800 meters longer, they would have finished in the top five, Wolfram said. At the finish line, the boys had a lot of emotions and were disappointed, thinking they had failed massively. We are going to be better off in the future because of this race. I'm not disappointed at all. Clear Lake falls to 9th. Anna Feuerbrack ran her best race of the season to finish in 15th with 19 minutes and 20 seconds. To help pace the Lions, Addie Dugan finished in 29th with 19 minutes and 48 seconds. Rebecca Steinbrunn in 54th with 20 minutes and 14 seconds. And Reese Brownlee in 104th with 21 minutes and 10 seconds. And Sailor Schmidt in 105th at 21 minutes and 14 seconds. Other team finishes. Garner Hayfield Ventura finished 12th in the Class 2A boys race. And Zach Fladebo, 16 minutes and 35 seconds, finished in 13th to pace the Cardinals. And that concludes today's reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger and the Mason City Globe Gazette for Monday, October 31st. I'm your reader, Mark John Conley. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thanks for listening, and have a safe and enjoyable Halloween.
People's Pharmacy Health Headlines. At high doses, nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like diclofenac, ibuprofen, or naproxen may increase the risk of kidney problems. The study that revealed this used de-identified medical records of more than 750,000 active duty U.S. Army soldiers. Consequently, these were active young and middle-aged adults. During the time of the study, from 2011 through 2014, nearly 18% of these soldiers got a prescription for 1 to 7 doses of an NSAID pain reliever in a month. Another 16% were prescribed more than 7 doses in a month. Fewer than 1% of these people were subsequently diagnosed with acute or chronic kidney disease. Nevertheless, the rate of kidney trouble was about 20% higher among people who had received high-dose NSAIDs than among those who had taken none. The authors described the increased risk as modest but statistically significant.
Another class of drugs that can lead to kidney injury is proton pump inhibitors. A data mining initiative of the FDA's Adverse Event Reporting System analyzed kidney-related side effects among 43,000 people who took a drug such as esomeprazole, lansoprazole, or omeprazole. Approximately 8,000 people taking a histamine 2 blocker such as ranitidine or famotidine served as controls, since they take these drugs for similar symptoms. The researchers found that 5.6% of people on PPIs alone had a kidney-related side effect, while only 0.7% of those on H2 blockers did. chronic kidney disease was 28 times more likely, and acute kidney injury was 4 times more likely among people taking PPIs. While this analysis shows association, not causation, there are previous studies linking PPIs and kidney damage.
There's growing concern about a mysterious infectious disease that has been spreading among the wild deer population for decades. Scientists call it CWD, or chronic wasting disease. Hunters refer to this condition as zombie deer disease. It can also affect elk and moose. The CDC reports that this infectious disease has spread to wildlife in 24 states and 2 Canadian provinces. CWD was first detected in Colorado among captive deer in the 1960s and in the wild deer population in the 1980s. It's now affecting deer in the Midwest, Southwest, and some parts of the East Coast. The disease appears to be caused by a prion infection reminiscent of mad cow disease. An infectious disease expert at the University of Minnesota has warned that hunters who eat contaminated deer meat may eventually develop the human equivalent of chronic wasting disease.
Shoulder replacement surgery is becoming increasingly common. Now researchers writing in the BMJ say that patients should be warned that the risks are higher than originally thought. The investigators reviewed hospital and mortality records in the UK. When men between 50 and 59 have this type of shoulder surgery, 1 in 4 will need further surgery on that shoulder within 5 years. In addition, older people who underwent this kind of surgical procedure experienced high rates of serious adverse events. 1 in 9 older women and 1 in 5 older men had an infection, major blood clot, heart attack or stroke, or died within 3 months. The authors of the study encouraged their colleagues to counsel patients about the risks as well as the benefits of this kind of surgery.
Drug interactions are a serious hazard in hospitals and the community. If patients receive prescriptions for incompatible medications, they can experience severe side effects that may even be life-threatening. Electronic medical records are intended to warn prescribers and pharmacists about potentially dangerous interactions, but many do so indiscriminately. The result is something called alert fatigue. If clinicians receive too many warnings, they may not pay attention to the really important ones. A team at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital reviewed their alert system. They removed unnecessary alerts and provided additional information to the most important ones. After they finished, they tracked clinicians' reactions. Alert overrides dropped by 40%. One important change linked alerts to the patient's laboratory data, making them much more targeted. And that's the health news from the People's Pharmacy this week.